Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Radio here on 3RPP, the voice of the peninsula. My name is Jonah Vella, and along with my co-host, Steve Pallas, over the next hour, we will be talking grassroots sport and inviting you to join us in our conversations because your voice and experiences are important to us. Steve Pallas, welcome, mate. How are you going on this fine morning?
Mate, very early. Can you believe they brought us back for a second week?
I can't believe they've brought us back for a second week. We must have been pretty damn good on the mics.
Oh, I think...
You? Now, we've got a very special show today, haven't we, mate?
Yeah, mate. This is a probably... Well, we don't have normal shows yet, with this, given it's our only second show, but this is a really special show. We're going to look at event management, but we're going to go behind the scenes of a very special event. We're going to go behind the scenes of the David Sands Road to Recovery event that's coming up. It's two events. It's on the first one's on the 22nd, Saturday the 22nd of Feb, so in a couple of weeks, which will be a large auction night at Mornington Peninsula. Our Peninsula Centre in Wilson's Road in Mornington, and the second event will be a 2020 cricket game at Mornington Cricket Club on the Sunday, which we'll talk about that. But so we've got a number of guests through the show, Joe, that A, will talk about David and the challenges he had, and then we'll go behind the scenes of the event.
Yeah, so for those people out there in the grassroots club environment, this is an example of where you are going to be using a big event to raise some funds for something that you're passionate about in your grassroots sports club community. So in this case, we're passionate about this bloke who's unfortunately had a bit of bad luck when it comes to his health, and we're rallying the community together to raise some funds for him. And there's going to be a lot of lessons that we can all learn from this. Now, just a brief intro on David Sands, because we're going to have his one of the people that know him very well in the studio very soon to talk about him. But why is David Sands so special?
And like many, many local sportsmen, they've just been entrenched in the community. So rather than us go into it, we'll let his brother-in-law and one of the Road to Recovery committee members, Michael Diveson, talk about that in a couple of minutes, Joe. But I guess if we go back to the event side of it, one of the challenges that clubs have is they don't understand... Lots of clubs can't decide that they're going to do these major events, but they don't understand the sheer enormity of the tasks that they face until they're doing it and they get swamped. So I guess that's a little bit about what the second part of the show will be, is about you know, the mechanics and how this group have pulled together. It worked brilliantly well. I'd be the honour of being on that committee as well to be part of it, and we've got a couple of community icons, Chris Holcomb and Jason Mathers, which will join us in the latter part of the show just to talk about that event management side and how they've pulled together that committee.
I noticed the red carpet outside in the studio as the boys were walking up.
Mate, so we are talking
top-notch talent,
and I mean, Chris Holcomb has obviously been, for those in the cricket community, has been an absolute legend for a very long period of time, high run scorer. Jason Mathers used to be a legend when he was at Mount Martha Cricket Club, has sold his soul around the peninsula, and now has turned himself from a prolific batsman to a strike wicket-taking bowler, which we will not talk about when we get him on the microphone. And Joe, if he starts to talk about bowling, we are going to take him off.
Well,
I had
enough trouble getting through security getting to the studio. It's just, man, it was a pack. Welcome to the boys. So we hope you stay tuned. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Michael Diveston about David Sands. So make sure your radio is firmly placed on the dial at 3RPP, the voice of the peninsula, with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas, on the Sports Community Radio Show.
New Atrium Restaurant not only has new owners, it also boasts many new facilities with something for all the family. There's the stunning Atrium Restaurant, a massive kids play area, a burger sports bar with Foxtel, and free function room hire.
Try one of their weekly specials, like Thursday's Mega Parma Night $12.99, Wednesday's Steak Night $19.99, or Monday's Kids Eat Free Night.
The new Atrium Restaurant, 10 Country Club Drive, 5 Safety Beach. Bookings call 59818123. Our station sponsor.
More and more people with a taste for quality are shopping at Eliza Meats. Kevin and his lean team pride themselves on the finest cuts. From juicy steaks and roasts to high-grade mince and sausages. And Eliza Meats are the gourmet specialists. Inquire about Eliza Meats Spit Hire. Phone 9787 4473 for a mouth-watering meal fit for a king. It's all at Eliza Meats. See our sponsor Kevin at Eliza Meats, 112B Mount Eliza Way, a station sponsor. Are you a business owner looking to cut costs in your business? Tough, isn't it? Let Bartercard show you a different way to increase your sales, cash flow and business profits. Don't wait. Increase your cash flow today. Boost your business with Bartercard. To find out how Bartercard can increase cash flow to your business, call 1300-BARTER. That's 1300-BARTER. Why don't you give your septic the flush? Construction has started on Peninsula Eco, Southeast Water's new sewage system to service properties in Rye, Legowrie, Portsea, St Andrews Beach and Sorrento. With the early connection option, you could give your septic the flush and connect to the sewer ahead of schedule. For more information on early connection, contact our team today. Phone 1800 720 613 or visit the Southeast Water website. Peninsula Eco. Connect early. A station sponsor.
P, the voice of the Peninsula, with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. You're listening to Sports Community Radio, and we've got a special guest here, Michael Diverston, who's going to talk to us about a local legend in the community, David Sands, who we are all getting together to raise some money for. He's had some bad luck with his health, and we, the community that is going to have a big fundraiser for him, and that's the reason that we're chatting to Michael. Welcome, Michael. How you doing, mate?
Good, Joe.
Mate, I just wonder if you could give us a bit of an insight into Sandsy, or as he's better known, Snooze, down here in the peninsula.
Yeah, okay. Well, I suppose the first thing everyone will want to know is why he's called Snooze.
Yep.
Yeah. So David is my brother-in-law. I married his sister. I don't think he was too happy about it at the start, playing cricket with him, but eventually he's come around to it.
The fact that you played cricket with him or that you married his sister?
Both, mate, both. I never got to play cricket with him. I was a forced cricketer. Now, David used to fall asleep pretty regularly in pretty interesting spots. So ACDC concert was his best one in the third row. But I do remember times where we've had to pull him out of the cruise club, knock on the dunny door and say, Dave, wake up.
So for those of you who aren't from the peninsula, like myself, and who has just moved down here, the Cruise Club is the one of the more famous local establishments.
One of the dirtier spots, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, so he's fallen asleep there a few times, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I think Christmas Eve was a good one too. He fell asleep in the bus stop and got locked up. So he's got a long history of being called Snooze, so that's kind of the reason behind the nickname.
Right, so he's a fair cricketer.
Very good cricketer.
Yeah. So talk us through that, like his juniors and his progression through the ranks to where he ended up. I mean, he's been playing cricket. He was still playing cricket before he got
Yeah, he won the best and fairest at Mount Martha in the last season that he played last year.
Yep.
I know only of, I don't know all the stats on what he's done, but from a brother-in-law perspective, I'll give you an overview of what I remember. I do remember when he was under 16s, I think he made a premiership. They won the premiership, but he won after making a ton in the semis and the grand final. And then he made it into the first team. And I think he was 12th man for the first year out of under 16s.
Yeah, I'll just jump in there. He played with Jason, I think.
The first year out of under 16s in 1990 was his first year in the seniors. Broke a finger or thumb in the semi-final, missed the grand final. And I think that might be the only game he has missed, give or take one or two, but I don't know of any, between now and the season that's just started in 2014. So
yeah, it's probably 2013,
2014. So between 1990, 2013, 2014, Joe, he was a outstanding first-grade cricketer and an amazing clubman more so and a great person to play against.
So they've won a swag of premierships over that time. And
yeah.
He actually developed as a good bowler. Originally, he was a good bat as a youngster. But a season over in the UK, he started...
So he had a crack in the UK, yeah?
Yeah, he went to the UK with Head and... Greenmall, was it called?
Bramall, played for Bramall.
Yeah. So I think over there he learned how to swing the ball. He came back as a bowler.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Well, he had to because he couldn't make a run. So in the end, he was bowling all day for him, but and moving down the order. So you know that was sort of the turning way point. It sort of went when he came back. Yeah,
yeah, that's Jace for anyone who wants to know. now you've told me a few stories about the great man, and one of them was around the way that he welcomes people to the club. I just wonder if you can just go over that again.
Absolutely. One of the things that sticks with my memory about Snooze is that new people to the club and people that have been in the club a little while, to a man, they all kind of say, the first person I met at Mount Martha was Dave.
Mm.
And that's simply because he's always the first person to go up and say hello to people when they're looking around in the club rooms and they don't know they're in a foreign environment, new to a club. Dave's always the first one there with an open hand saying, g'day, I'm Snooze.
Mm.
And he's always interested in all levels of cricket. So he would be as happy to talk with the guys in the fifths as he is to talk with the guys in the first. And I think that holds a lot of weight at a club.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's not just cricket. He's part of the tennis club as well, right?
Yeah, he's part of the Somerville Tennis Club. And
yep.
I think he started playing just to play with Sarah, his stepdaughter. And it just grew from there and he started to really like it. I don't think she plays
is
anymore,
he,
but he still plays.
Is he the type of bloke that can pick up anything and just, you know, natural talent? No?
He's rubbish at squash.
Rubbish at squash?
Yeah.
No good at squash?
I don't know if he's much of a footballer either, to be honest.
No, not much.
But, yeah, I don't think his old man was going to let him play footy anyway.
So it's safe to say he's a fairly well-known individual on the peninsula.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And
okay. Joe, it's not just this sport where he entrenched himself in the community. He's been a postie for about 17 or 18 years. Only had one, two, or three rounds, but in the Mornington Peninsula region. And when he got ill, and Mick will talk about it later, he had streets of people signing cards and dropping them off at Australia Post. And one of the reasons that he was called Snooze was because he spent a lot of time working in the pubs and hotels and built up this amazing group of friendships. So he's what's created, and we'll hear about later, such an amazing public response has been his involvement, investment in his community, which, as Mick said, you know, it transcended cricket. He made everyone feel part of, welcome and part of his community and that sort of stuff. And
now, Steve, your nickname is Chief, I want everyone who meets you out in the streets, now that you're a famous radio person, to call you Chief. You actually wicket kept to the great man. Is that right?
I had that honour of listening to him talk about his bowling, yeah, and also listening to another committee member, Andrew Brown, yell from second slip, Snooze, if you want to enjoy your cricket, bowl on the off stump. So, yeah, I've had the pleasure of playing cricket with David since 1990, except for the last couple of years. And some of the guests later on, Jason Mathers has come through all his junior with Snooze and a lot of senior cricket. And Chris Holcomb has played probably 15 years, and he can explain that later.
Well, one of the things I want to touch on, you can all jump in here, is that I just want to get a feeling of his contribution to the Mount Martha Cricket Club. So he's played there from his juniors. He's been, you know, talk me through it. He's been a captain of the club.
There's not a role he hasn't done. Other than president, I don't think. President and secretary, he's just about done everything else.
Yeah, he coached juniors for 8 years and didn't have a kid at the club.
That just speaks volume for the guy, doesn't it?
I think that's an amazing effort, Justin. It's on itself. He's been on the committee forever. He's a life member of the club, and a club that's only got 10 life members. So that'll give you... I mean, that in itself gives you an indication of the sort of person that we're
talking
about.
Of the esteem that he's been held in. Yeah. Okay, Mick, on a more serious note, can you talk us through what happened with him in terms of his health?
It's there's two stories. Well, there's two ways you can tell the story. There's the really, most people want to know very quickly, and we can say, look, he's had bacterial meningitis and now he's in a incapacitated state where he's sort of rebuilding himself. And the long version is quite detailed.
So well, I want the long version, and yep. I especially want our listeners to understand the challenges that he faced and the enormous courage that he's shown to overcome the hurdles that have been put in front of him. And there's plenty of them, as I'm sure you'll go through.
So so June last year, just around the time when Australia qualified for the Socceroos, qualified for the World Cup, I'll never forget it because David actually, he was going to come to the city with me to watch the game at the pub, and he wouldn't come. And he'd been out all the weekend before, and Dave was living with us at that time. And he just wouldn't have a bar. He said, I got an earache. And it was very unlike him to not want to go out for a beer, especially on an occasion like that. And I came home from the city quite boisterous, called him soft, regrettably, and got stuck into him a bit and said, well, how bad are you? You won't even have a beer. But he actually said, it's bleeding, Diver. I've got blood coming out of my ear. It's a bit scary. And I said, mate, get yourself to the doctor tomorrow. You might have to take a day off. Thinking not much more of that. So pretty much an innocuous earache. And then on the Wednesday, he took the day off. On Thursday, he sat at home with one of our kids, looked after the Billy Lid all day. And then Thursday night, I came home from work and he slept all through. And he woke up at about midnight. And I heard him in the hall and I said, what are you doing, mate? And he's staggering through the hall. And I said, you don't look right. And he said, oh, I think I need to sleep this off. The next morning, he couldn't get out of bed to take his son to school. So we took Daniel to school. And luckily, very luckily, we all went off to work. We dropped Daniel off and they'd already been to the doctor. Like, he was taking antibiotics. We just thought, it's going to get better. Luckily, Kenny dropped in to see what was going on and I think to put a foot up his bum and try and get him to go to work.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of the way Kenny, his father, is. And found him in a very bad way. He was delirious. He'd actually been playing Candy Crush quite a lot to the point where when he got past the 100th level, he'd walk around the house with his bat in the air, with his cricket bat to mark the ton. So we didn't realise it until after, but he started going through all the mathematical equations and the colour denominations of Candy Crush verbally. And Kenny just went, you're no good at maths. I'm taking you to the hospital. So he rushed him into Frankston. And I think I got there 2 hours after that. And he had begun having seizures. And that's when they decided that they would put him into a coma. They had a very clear, they were running a heap of tests, but very quickly they said to us, we think it's meningitis, could be viral, could be bacterial. For your sake, hope it's viral meningitis.
So bacterial's the worst out of the two.
Yeah, and don't Google it. It's scary.
Right.
I think that's probably the first thing I did when I got home.
Yep.
I went, what's the difference? I don't understand it. What are we facing? And the first thought was, good Lord, he's got a very slim chance here.
Hmm.
Even then, though, I don't think we understood the gravity of the situation.
Hmm.
He was in the coma all weekend. He came out on the Monday and he was not great, but he could register with people what was going on. He recognised people. He had the ability to talk to us and he seemed to be hearing okay. At that time, I actually thought he had problems, and it was when Jace came into the hospital. Jason was standing on the right-hand side of him, and I don't think he registered that head was there.
Right, right.
Looking back now. But so that was probably the first sign that the infection hadn't been put under control. They put Dave into the coma, and the first step is to ascertain whether it's bacterial or viral. They do a thing called a lumbar puncture, which straight into the spine, which is fairly invasive. They did that 3 times and it didn't work. So they actually had to hold off for 24 hours until the nurse that, or the doctor that had success in doing that procedure could come back in and do it. Once they actually did the lumbar puncture and they got the fluid off the brain, they could see that it was very cloudy and the infection was at a very rapid rate. So they tested the liquid, the cloudy liquid, and then they decided on what plan of attack they would do with the treatment. They went forward with the strongest drugs that they had. And then he got moved out of intensive care at Frankston into a normal ward. Okay, he was talking at this point. He was very hard of hearing. But we all thought, oh, he's out of the woods, you know. That's pretty good. He'll be home in a week and everything will be pretty good. But the thing with a brain infection, and basically meningitis is an infection of your brain, is that once something's in the brain, it's impossible. The brain actually protects everything that's in there. So for a drug to penetrate and actually cure the infection, it has to work doubly hard. The infection beat the drugs that they were giving them. And they moved him on the Wednesday following to Alfred. And they said to us it was just for observation. On the way there, he had a series of 5 strokes. So he went from that morning talking with Daniel. I was there when Daniel had arrived and he was talking with Daniel, all cool. And then that night, we had a training session with Steve and then went in there on the way home and he was completely blank, really vacant. Couldn't get any response, and there was 8 neurosurgeons in the ward at 11:30 at night. I went, this doesn't look good. They then did a brain operation to remove some of the bone around the ear to relieve pressure because the swelling in the brain was so big. The operation didn't work as well as they hoped. So following that, 2 days on from there, they reinduced the coma and they did open brain surgery, which they're reluctant to do at the best of times because you increase the chances of infection. But the neurosurgeon who worked on Dave was the same neurosurgeon who worked on Jimmy Stein's. He said, at this point, we have to do it.
So at this point, had the conversation gone from, we're monitoring him to we don't know how this is going to pan out? Is that how it was it at that stage?
It was a real day-by-day
right.
proposition. It wasn't, they were never giving us any hope of points. It was basically, we'll see what happens, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
They don't like giving false hope at any point, which is probably the story of everything that we've been through. So they had the operation with the, and it was a successful operation. But then following the strokes, David had lost the ability to operate the right-hand side of his body. So the left-hand side of the brain operates the right-hand side of the body. All the tissue on the left-hand side of the brain had been starved of blood flow. Enough that had caused what they thought was permanent damage to his movements on the right-hand side of his body. He couldn't swallow, talk, move his right hand or foot. And the doctor's opinions from the outset was always that that's permanent. They also, once it gets to that point and he can't swallow, they then had to use a suction to go down into the lungs to remove fluid from the lungs.
Right.
And the biggest risk there is an ammonia. So David then fought off 3 ammonias as he went through.
It's all right, mate. Take your time.
The difficult part was then that people wanted to tell us, it can't get any better. And people telling us that, you know, you are, that what he was facing was a lifelong process of that. The third time when he went in, back in, into intensive care, the nurse, I don't know how it ended up, but I was there late at night, and she decided to just railroad me about this can't go on. You've got to give up.
Mm.
And thankfully, we'd been through enough to that point to know that medical staff have opinions. And whilst they come from a background of really great history, they don't always know the patient.
Mm.
And at that point, I just said, just stop talking because I'm not interested in what you're going to say. And I don't think he's given up. So there's no way known we're going to. And from there, David has shown at every step just amazing fight. There were times there where you thought, geez, he's up against it. But he kept just knocking it off 1 hour at a time, 1 day at a time, 1 week at a time.
Mm. Little movements, little signs.
They happened really slow. And so he was another... In total, he was at Alfred for 3.5 months. Mm. And we went through a hell of a lot of different progressions there with him being awake but then not being able to move the toes and the hands much at all. The hand was the last thing to move, and that took another 6 weeks. So even when he came home, so he went from there to a rehab facility in Frankston, and during his time at the rehab facility at Frankston for 8 weeks there, at points in time it looked like he wasn't going to progress much further. The real turning point was when he got home and he was back in his own environment and he was able to then start seeing a way forward.
Mm.
And through it all, Ken has been the driving point that's kept him focused on what he needs to do. He's been hard as hell on him, but only because he wants his son better. And he's been inspirational the way he's led the little things right from the start when David had had to have a suction every 30 minutes from the fluid off his lungs, and nurses weren't doing it properly. They actually weren't going deep enough. That's a horrible thing to watch, but Kenny ended up doing the procedure most times. He would say, put it down further. Give it to me, I'll do it. And I'm sure that that saved his life without any shadow of a doubt. The next step is through the rehab, Ken's been there every day and he's been driving him. I think he's been driving him mental.
Yeah.
But he's been driving him and saying, you have to try this, you have to do that. Come on, give it a go. And David hasn't ever taken a step back, but the driving for the two of them together have been a pretty awesome team.
Yeah. So I just want to recap for the listeners out there. We're talking about a bloke who you thought had a simple earache. He's taken to hospital. He has to be put into an induced coma. He has to have brain surgery. He suffers 3 pneumonias. He has to have several spinal taps or lumbar punctures. He can't swallow. He loses the right side of his body. And yet, after all of that, and when he's been told when you guys are told that he's not going to improve much, he's able to fight his way through it and come out to the point where he comes down to the club now. He's done some walking. I mean, to me, that just beggars parallel. His courage and his determination is something to behold. And that story in itself is awe-inspiring. And I'm sure, like, I'm touched just by listening to you recount it. I'm sure all our listeners would be absolutely amazed by that story of perseverance and courage and love, especially all of you guys around him, because he can't do it by himself.
One of the things is you live it day by day.
Mm.
And you're kind of in the trenches, so you don't really look back at where you've come from. But there are times when people come back after being, like, a physio,
has
been away for 3 weeks, came back today and was blown away by the progress that he's made. And his comment today to David was, you'll be running in 2 months. If you had told us that in November, we would have all laughed.
Yeah, right.
So
that's amazing. And that's the reason why we're here and why you guys have all got together to help. Yeah. Because essentially the funding for his rehab, which is so important, he needs the physios, that is running out or has run out?
Yeah, he's got some outpatient coverage for the next few weeks, and right. then he's completely privately funded.
Yeah, and that's why we're all getting together to raise some funds for him by putting on this event.
There's a cautionary tale in your superannuation you can tick to have disability cover. David had two superannuation funds. We just recently found out he rolled them both into one. If he had rolled it the other way, he would have had disability cover. Mm-hmm. The disability fund wasn't an option on his superannuation, and that's going to make a world of difference to his funding for his rehab. But, I mean, things are looking pretty good from that perspective, thanks to a lot of work of good family and friends.
All right, thanks. Mm-hmm. All right, Mick, when we come back, we're going to be talking to some of the lads that are helping put together David Sands or Snoozer's fundraiser. So stay tuned. You are with Joe and Steve, Sports Community Radio on 3RPP, the voice of the peninsula. Okay, it's now time to talk to some of the legendary boys down here on the peninsula involved in the David Sands auction night, which happens on Saturday the 22nd of February 2014 at the Peninsula Community Theatre on Wilson's Road, Mornington. Tickets are limited, so make sure you book now. It's from 7:30 till 12 a.m. and you can get more information at the website www.davidsandsr2r.webs.com. And from there, you'll be able to purchase tickets. So make sure you support this auction night and buy some tickets and get along to the night. It should be a fantastic event. Now, Steve, you've got Chris and Jason who are helping you on the committee to put together, along with Michael, the David Sands auction night. And we're going to talk about how you guys have come together to organise this event. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and before I introduce the guys, story or experience that Mick shared before the break, that was happening over a period of 2 months, Mick, 6 weeks, 6 months. And so all these people in the community, you know, were almost helpless. You know, we felt almost helpless. Well, we were helpless. We couldn't do anything but go and visit, go and support the family, kind of do what you do, but there was nothing we could do. And then it got to a point, and boys, I'll introduce you now, two of Snoozer's great friends from ever, and I'm talking 20, 30, 40 years in some cases, Jason Mathers and Chris Holcomb. Boys, welcome to Saturday Morning Radio.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for having us, guys. Yeah,
no worries. It doesn't really matter, and I can't even remember how it all this committee started, but I remember when it was mentioned to me, I couldn't say yes quick enough to get on board because I felt like I could finally do something to help. Is that how you guys felt?
I think initially when you said we were all in that sort of helpless state of not being able to do anything, a few sort of clash. I know I was speaking to Andrew Brown and a few others and said, listen, when we get to a point, if we get to a point, and we need to come together as a group, just count me in. And I think a lot of people felt that way, and talking to a lot of people, whenever you have an opportunity, I want to be in and help him out. So it took a little while to work out exactly how and what we were going to do to be able to help Sandy, whether it was something manual or whether it was something that we had to generate as a sort of committee. But it got to the point where the family had sort of, he got out of the woods there, and financially there were some holes, and that's where we sort of got a committee together and thought that we could aid in providing some form of financial help with the help of obviously the community and each other, family and friends.
So he'd take us, just describe the committee for those that are, we've called it the David Sands Road to Recovery, which is the R2R bit of the website that you read out there. Just describe the people and I guess the skills that they bring to the committee. We didn't pick the committee or the group of people because of their skills, but as we go, it's worked really well for us.
Yeah, it's an impressive group, as in that it comes from different segments of his life.
Yeah.
You know, so there was, you know, I was involved with him a lot early and, you know, not as much later on, but we always stayed in touch, and Chris a bit later on in his cricket career, and Brownie as well, and yourself. And then the tennis club, we've got a couple of people from the tennis club as well. Yeah. You know, I'm sure we could have got more if we could have. We got the Post. Aussie Post as well involved. You know, everywhere that he, you know, in parts of his life where he'd been involved, we couldn't get enough volunteers really to get out, get involved and get on the committee and start helping out. And and it's given us, you know, a different demographic, age groups and different backgrounds and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I suppose the first couple before we got Angie on board, is who probably was almost not really involved in the whole process of Dave being crook and all that kind of stuff. Mm. She really came in and gave us a clear path.
Yeah, so Angie became our project manager, didn't she?
That's right. That was a real change, I think, in the direction of, because we used to get there and talk a lot about him and talk about good ideas, but we'd sort of not be on the... we wouldn't be going anywhere. We'd just be adding.
Yeah, and if we look at this now from a club and event management and pulling it together, I mean, that's one of the challenges that often happens. And Jace, your professional job is working with Cricket Victoria, so you're working with volunteer committees all the time, and that's something that we see at Sports Community is clubs meet a lot and talk a lot, but don't do things. And I would agree. Would you agree with that? With Head Chris, that when Angie came in and brought that, dare I say it, leadership to a group of eight blokes, I think it was, plus a couple of ladies from the tennis club. So two ladies and eight fairly domineering or opinionated blokes. We kind of started to get some movement there.
It's sort of, she was sort of the gel that bound us all. We had a lot of great ideas and a lot of different places where we were all coming from, but she basically put a template together of things that needed to be done and who should be doing those things and who can best provide that to get the complete job done. So that template that she brought in was fantastic and saved a lot of time and a lot of conversation for sure.
Yeah.
She became that person at your club, whether it's cricket or footy or tennis, that is the organiser and runs the committee and gets things, tasks,
keeps them
tracked and done.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And she became that person, which all of us coming from that sort of background really thought, okay, we'll get in behind it. It was quite easy to do that.
Yeah. Deciding how you're going to raise... Well, see, our objective very clearly from day one was to raise funds and bring people along for the ride, but to raise funds. And I found it really interesting that we went a fair way down the track. We probably went 4, 5, 6 weeks working on one event format, and then all of a sudden we change, which I think is brilliant. But Chris, I mean, that you drove that change. So do you want to take us through what we were going to do and then what we are now doing and why we changed?
Yeah, no, it was just a radical sort of change that we took. Initially, what we had experienced as part of the community was going to function, big functions, say maybe a sportsman's night or a businessman's lunch and things like that, where you've got a big venue, sit-down meal, drinks over the bar, things like that, which is easy to organise, expensive to organise, but... paid staff, things like that, high ticket value, but a really professional look. People felt comfortable there. It was something that we sort of were looking to channel and throw in sort of an auction to raise some funds, things like that, which seemed to be the best form at that time, the best form, and we were going flat out towards that. We'd ring the race club, we'd had organisation with them, catering people. It was really starting to move along. I was fortunate enough, but obviously not a fortunate thing, to go to Adam Hunter's... it was a fundraising evening down at Germana in December. He had an unfortunate issue with his health as well, where I sort of ventured down and the community's response from that night was massive. He had 500 people down at a squash court in Germana. He had a lot of volunteers down there, people running around. It was a low-cost entry to get in. They were selling beer across the bar. A lot of people had bonded together to put some auction items together. And it was just a huge effort. And they had a really quick turnaround too. I think they only organised it in a couple of weeks. And I'd spoken to a few people after. I said, look, it was a fantastic night. You did really well with the amount of people that were there and the short turnaround. How'd you go? And the amount of money they raised was phenomenal. And we were looking back at our figures on a big venue with
500 people,
$100 a ticket, buy drinks over the bar, speakers. Like, it was a lot more professional outfit. But you look at the figures and they just didn't add up. There's too much money spent on the actual event as opposed to the purpose of what the event was for. So that week I'd come back into the committee. It was mid-December. We were flying around. We were just about to break for Christmas. Brownie was going to America. We were doing all this. We'd had it sorted. January and February were going to be our let's knuckle in and get what needs to be sorted. And I actually just threw out there, I said, I don't know if you guys want to do this, but listen to what I've been to at the weekend. This is the result that they've had. And everyone sort of just stood there looking at each other for probably, I don't know, a couple of minutes. And we explored it for another 10, had a quick chat around. And I think it was pretty obvious from the talk that we'd had in that 10 minutes that we needed to go on a completely different tact, which at that stage was pretty scary.
Oh, yeah. And continues to be scary. But I think... Again, looking at it from a more theoretical reason, the reason we were able to make that decision, and it's such an important decision, was because we knew what we were trying to do.
We very clearly understood
we were there to make money. And so one of the things out of that discussion that we had on that night was that's actually something we shouldn't be ashamed of.
No.
You know, and so therefore it doesn't really matter. We were trying to put on a really fantastic, highly polished event.
Yeah.
But we didn't need to do that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that,
but
no.
It didn't get the job done that we wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that was the major, major issue.
So what, Heather, take us through what event are we now doing and what has that meant from our workload?
Well, I must say that the initial, like, you know, at first we discussed what event we were going to do and then it went down that path and I wasn't happy with that event. As in, once we decided we'll go on that way, I was...
Full board, all in.
But
yeah.
I remember saying to Mick, I just wouldn't be able to attract the people at my cricket club to go. So that was one of the... And when soon as Groin come back with that figure and that purpose and what we were trying to do, we were like, yeah, let's go, which was great. But
What are we doing now? What's our event? So format.
We decided, we threw around ideas and, you know, a few of us suggested the church down at Osborne Drive down there as well, the big new church there, or the Finlay Hall, the famous Finlay Hall, you know, some of the best acoustics in Melbourne apparently. So we sort of shopped around and found that and said, okay, let's just run it a lot less... a lot less fancy and just a basic evening to raise funds. And now we went full ball on getting a venue, getting auction items and getting a lot of things donated, everything done by volunteers. So the food and the alcohol and all that kind of stuff, all done by volunteers rather than paying, nothing against the race course, rather than paying staff to do that for you.
Yeah.
It has created more work for us and another important task is in to attract the right volunteers, you know, volunteers. With the RSA and all that kind of stuff and with the right skills and with having money and all that kind of stuff. So it's really done a full U-turn because we're going to raise more money and it's going to be harder for us to do, probably a little bit more work, but the outcome is what we're after.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess because of who it was and Snooze had such a big impact on so many people that we believe that, and we're looking at somewhere between 50 and 100 volunteers we're going to need on the night, we should be able to attract that easily. But for clubs, so that's a really important thing for clubs to understand is before they go down the self-management route, actually, can you attract the volunteers that you're going to need? So, and that's a really important thing because it all of a sudden stops becoming fun if you don't have that workload. One of the things that worked really well, I think, in the way that we as a committee have worked is we allocated tasks really early on and two different people and Head and as you said, Brownie was overseas and Head missed a meeting, so Brownie, Head and myself have got cash, waste and traffic. But so there's another tip. Don't miss the meetings.
I might just interject at this point, Chief, because there's a lot of nicknames being thrown around here and I know you boys are all local legends down here on the peninsula, but for the the edification of our listeners. Groin is Acker Chris Holcomb, and head is Acker Jason Mathers, yes. And chief is Acker, of course, Stephen Palace, and Divo's just Divo. So I'm sure the boys need no introduction, but just in case, I thought I might clear that up for you.
Yeah, thanks for that, Joe. Now, Chris. Chris, I haven't called you that for 15 years.
Thanks, mate. Maybe go back to groin, chief.
It's what your mum calls you when you're in trouble, actually. So how did we break up? I mean, this is a massive event. How do we break up the tasks?
It was more to do with strengths of the individual in probably in the group that we had. So things like the event management, Mick Wonderley, who's in the committee, had done a lot of work with the local football club and had been through business and luncheons and presentation nights and all that sort of thing. So him and myself and Divo sort of got together and said, right, we'll run the function side of things. And then things like, obviously we haven't touched on the 2020 game, but because we've got a Cricket Victoria link, Jason, Mike Ronke, etc., organising players for that. Sponsorship-wise, I'm pretty well business-linked with the community. Divo is as well, and so we've sort of been in charge of that. So people's strengths through the group we've sort of tried to capitalise on. It hasn't been easy sometimes, but the dedication that those people have shown in the task has been huge. And the more people you have doing that, even if, say, their strength isn't in that, if they can help and there's manpower there, it gets done a lot easier. So yeah. That was sort of how we...
How did you manage the egos, Chris? Because that's a big problem for local footy clubs, soccer clubs, you know. When they get into a committee meeting and people think they should be doing a job, and, you know, was that ever a problem, or you guys all just work together to pull into the right direction?
Joe, if I can interject.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that's been really clear from a family perspective is that there hasn't been any egos. And I mean that, like, because we came in late to the committee. Ken's come in the last month and a half, and I came in at the end of December, and it was very clear that the people involved in it had a genuine interest in Dave's health, well-being and his future. So I don't think that's been an issue at all. And that might be rare from a committee perspective, but there just hasn't been a lot of that.
Well,
at all.
When everybody's shooting for the same goal and on the same page, then egos don't tend to be a problem, because you're all quite confident people. So that's great. It's really good.
And I think that actually makes it very easy to make decisions as well. When you've got a really clear objective, then egos are irrelevant anyway, because it doesn't matter who's saying and how loud they're saying whatever they're saying. Does this help us achieve our objective? It's a yes or no question, and it makes it really, there's no ambiguity with what we're doing. Chris, before I get to, we're talking about some of the logistics and the 2020 game, which you're helping very much organise. I've just been, as I said earlier on, Jason Brownie and myself are kind of behind the scenes people. We'll be picking up the rubbish and the money and the keeping them separated, hopefully, and organising the traffic. But you're kind of you're putting on the show, and in our case, the show is a raffle. Oh, sorry, it's a series of silent auctions and auction items. And I look down the list, and it's an amazing list of prizes that Mick and, or the two Micks and yourself have pulled together. Tell me how, or tell the listeners, how have you gone about that?
It's an interesting one. I haven't been involved on that side of the fence before. I run a business in town, and I get approached probably 10, 12 times a week for auction items, raffle donations, sponsorship, all that sort of stuff. The thing that I've found, and I would find that difficult too, is being at a sporting club and going into businesses and trying to drum up that support for a sporting club, where a lot of people don't have emotional ties. If they can get something out of it for their business, then that's fantastic. I might slip you something. If they haven't got any emotional ties, or they don't think that it's going to be prospective for their business, then more than likely they'll just fob you off. Which is hard for sports clubs to do, just keep buttering up and keep asking. What we've sort of found and what I've found is that because Dave was such a strong or is such a strong figure in the community, is that you don't need much prompting into people that have had experience with him in the past to get involved. So on some of the major stuff that we've been able to generate, a lot of it hasn't been myself or Mick or Mick Wonderly really pushing hard. It's been more them coming out of the woodwork and saying, listen, this is what I can do to help. This is what I can provide. And that's fantastic. Initially, it's getting in touch with those people and saying that we're putting this on. We need a hand. Can you provide anything? But the majority of it has just been an overwhelming response from local business, old friends, things like that, to want to be involved some way. Yeah.
So getting that's critical, isn't it? Getting the word out, and I guess part of the way that, and Joe, you had a lot to do with setting up the communication side of this through the website and the social media, and now we're shooting out emails on a weekly basis to about 600 people, I think. But that's been an important part of any club function, isn't it, Joe, getting that message out?
Yeah, I think so. And a big thanks to Stuart Wilson, Willow, who works for Sports Community, and a big thanks to Sports Community for sponsoring that effort. It definitely makes a big difference, I think, when you can clearly articulate to the business community and the people that you're trying to attract to either the event itself or to give to the event in terms of auction items and these kind of things, is you need to be able to tell them what it's all about.
Yeah.
So I think what you boys and girls have done in terms of the marketing collateral, for lack of a better word, in the website and all the communications that have been put out to the community, you've been able to tell the story of Snooze and his contribution to the community. And that just makes you want to get involved. And, you know, I'm new to the Peninsula community. I haven't been here long. But I felt like I wanted to contribute to this bloke's fundraising effort, because I could empathise and sympathise with his journey, because you guys have been able to describe it to me. And I met Snooze as well, so that helps. Even though he bagged me for not being able to drink very much, but
you met Snooze, didn't you, coming into the office, the sports community office, and Snooze having a putt.
Yeah.
But I mean, one of the things, the indicators of how much support there was for David was we put the Facebook page up, and within 48 hours, I think it was, he had over 700 likes, which was amazing. But so the communication side's really important. The other thing that we did as a committee, which was leveraging off the strengths of the committee, was decide that one event wasn't enough. We thought we might do two. Well, actually, we did four, but don't have time to go into that. But the second event, we thought the day after the auction night that we'd have a T20 celebrity game. And the reason that we did that was because of the strengths of the committee. We had Jason, who works for Cricket Victoria, Mike Ronke, who's the president of Mount Martha Cricket Club, works for Cricket Victoria, and also another key person later in Snooze's time at Mount Martha was Jason Jacoby, who's worked a long time senior executive at Puma. So together, you guys had access to a lot of people that made it just logical that cricket was involved some way or other. So take us through that side of it. How have you as a group, and how's everyone pulled together that side of getting the celebrities?
Well, I think there's a strong cricket flavour among the committee, and strong connections, as you said, and not just to Cricket Victoria, but in the local cricket community as well. So it was almost like a no-brainer that, and it's something that Dave loved and always participated in.
Yep.
And he would have been the first to play if it was for some other reason, So it really was something that we really had to do. And it's a way to maybe also, the people that might not... Originally, when we had the tie and suit and tie, dinner, dance, music, whatever, it was another way to diversify the group that could come.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose now what it'll do, some will be able to come to both, which is great, but the ones that can't come to the auction night will be able to come to the T20 game, so kids.
And family, yeah.
Kids and family, and, anybody can come to the T20 game, whereas the auction night, you know, there's going to be alcohol and it's going to be over 18 to get in and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, and again, if we went back to the dinner dance thing, it was going to diversify the people that could come and the amount of people that we could touch that could come and help Sandsy out. So some wouldn't have been comfortable coming and some still might not be comfortable coming to the auction night, but we know a lot of people will be comfortable coming
to the 2020.
Sitting down on the grass and having a soft drink or buying a hot dog or having a can of beer at the T20 game.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. Now, often people feel communicating or touching base with celebrities, or, you know, celebrities in this case, is actually quite daunting and intimidating. So I know you were talking last night at the meeting that you were talking to, you're going to talk to Jason Backer, for instance, who's Cadell Evans's manager. He has a history in cricket. So, but how would you recommend to clubs? How do you get in touch with these people?
I think you've got to use every bit of connection that you've got. And look, once I committed to the committee and committed to the process, I sort of sat down and just wrote a list of all the people that I'd worked with or I knew. And so to use Jason as an example, once I was on the committee, I decided to ring him and ask him for suggestions, if he had any ideas that I could take back. Also knowing that I'd also be hitting him up for merchandise and all that kind of stuff as well. And as it turns out, he actually had the same meningitis, but he got through it. But, you know, and the other thing he did mention to me was that he would get a dozen phone calls a week in regards to things like this in the community. You know, people having being unlucky in health and life in general.
Yeah.
And he finds it's really, really hard to say no.
Yeah.
But he gave me some ideas, and just so that was one way. So I thought, I used to work with Jason. I got on really well with him, and I hadn't worked with him for 4 years. I hadn't, and I'd spoken to him once, bumped into him, but I knew that he would listen to me, and I left a message. And I know he's really busy. It took him a week to get back to me, but he got back to me, and he gave me an hour of his time. So since then, I've gone back to him and offered him a spot in the team, but he hasn't come back to me. But he will come back to me. I know that because we've got a. I've explained to him what we're trying to do. Listened to some of the things that he's done in the past on how to raise money, and a lot of things he suggested. It's the way we've gone.
Yeah,
which is really good. Getting a lot of the stuff donated, and you know, the beer for the T20 game and all that stuff. So that was one thing. I just sort of wrote down a list of all the people I'd know that I knew. Some not that well, some really well, some I didn't even know, but sort of just had a tenuous sort of link with them.
Well, it's been interesting listening on the committee, like how many people, and we know special committee, you know, how many people we know that you can get to through one or two degrees of separation. You know, someone threw up Hugh Jackman. Yeah. And we could get to Hugh Jackman if we wanted to, for instance.
When you read the list of donated auction items, it's really interesting. So I started running where have we got that from? The air conditioner from Corny, right? And I could almost figure out who was the person that donated the goods in a lot of the cases, because they all knew him some way, and then obviously someone on the committee knew him, and they were asked, and straight away they donate, you know, which is a really interesting process.
I think that's really important to structure your event around what you can actually do, and so we as a group we're very confident that we could deliver a 2020 celebrity cricket game. So whereas some other groups may not be so able to do that. So that's really, but that works both sides.
Our strengths, definitely our strengths is the auction night with Chris and Mike have done a great job in getting all the stuff together. I mean, that's their strength, and the T20 stuff, they're going to be involved in that as well. And that we just sort of play to our strengths, as a good footy coach would say, I suppose.
Yeah. And we spent, Mick, I'll let you jump in. We spent a lot of time actually trying to find the venue. I mean, that's one of the challenges for these sorts of things, because Chris, how many people were we expecting today to the event?
Officially, 425, is it?
Well, something like that. That's bigger than most club rooms can handle. It's bigger than most churches can handle, and bigger than most places can handle. So choosing a venue is actually a really challenging concept. And for the clubs, use a little bit of creativity. you know, like we could have, as you said with Adam Hunters, he did his in a squash court and a gym court. Like we live on the Mornington Peninsula, which is up a little bit in the Red Hill. You know, you're full of big apple sheds and those sorts of things. So when you're putting your event together, look outside the box and the creativity. And that was what we fell into a little bit at the start, wasn't it? We did what we know.
That was by far, out of the whole lot, one of the hardest things we've had to do.
Yeah.
The venue, to get a venue to suit a large number of people, to be able to cater for your own alcohol, to be able to cater for your own food, and to have it at an adequate level and have it locally was enormous. And the amount of places that we went through and thought through that maybe possibility, but it got knocked off for some particular reason, was enormous. There's some great venues around Mornington Peninsula. A, maybe cost was an issue. B, maybe they didn't have a liquor license. C, maybe they didn't have kitchen facilities. D, they might have been too far out of the way. All these sort of things, it was really difficult. The biggest thing the clubs have got on their side is that they've got a base. Their first and foremost is their club rooms. If it gets too big for their club rooms, obviously the costs are lower there. That's when you've got to start nutting out what you're going
to
do.
Yeah, and so the next point of call that I would recommend to any club is to go to your council. Bring your council into the equation really quickly, because they have got, and it doesn't matter which council that your club is a part of, they have got amazing facilities throughout the council. Most people don't even know about them. So and that worked for us. We kind of contacted the council pretty quickly, told them what we were doing, and looked at a couple of options, and then very quickly found the right option. So that was really important. And Mikko, you're now, part of your portfolio is food and drink. How many people? 425 people, give or take, 50 or 60, Mick. How are you going to do that?
One of the things I wanted to touch on really quickly, Head was talking about how we've contacted a lot of people that we knew. And sometimes within a committee, you get a very clear focus of what you want to achieve, but you also get a bit of groupthink. And this morning in particular, in regards to food and drink, I've had a bit of a wake-up moment on not understanding well enough the marketing opportunity that there is for a brand. Now, I had a conversation with a guy this morning that I clearly had in my mind, this is an emotional attachment. I asked for something very small, but then he quickly turned it around and said, my brand has got a massive opportunity here. We're interested in the market that you have, and the opportunity to access that for our brand and distribute a product to it. I've been so focused on the fundraising for Snooze, I hadn't really thought about it from his perspective. So sometimes taking that step back and having a look at it from the supplier's perspective is critical. And probably in that instance, I've lucked into it. The more phone calls you make, the luckier you get. And we've made a lot of phone calls, but in that instance, if I had have taken 10 minutes to actually look up the brand that he's involved with, I would have turned around and gone, this is a no-brainer for them, and I would have pitched it differently. So insofar as fruit and grog, we've actually gone outside the committee to different people that have helped. So Paula Crosman and her expertise isn't involved in the committee, but very quickly was able to steer us in the right direction because she's had expertise in that area and just said, no, you need to do X, Y, Z. Less preparation time. Be really clever about the amount of mess you're going to make. It's less cleaning up time, less volunteers, less cooking. She's been really concise in the way to set it out and to fix things up from a flow point of supplying the food in its basic first instance to serving.
So. I just want to jump in there, Mick, because our naive menu was a sausage sizzle. Right, which is the same naive menu that every single club takes on. Can you take us through, Paula, after she finished, I made the initial phone call to Paula and she laughed at me for about 15 minutes. But can you take us through the logic of why that turns out to be a ridiculous thing to do?
Okay, so firstly, a sausage sizzle is easy because that's all we can cook. basic man thing. Man, grill, sausages, no problems.
Great.
Yeah, bread, no need for a plate even. The key for a sausage sizzle, A, you've got to have a space, an outdoor space. There then becomes the issue of if you've got a barbecue in an open area, and it's a hot night and there's a total fire ban, you could be in strife running your barbecue. So she very quickly just said, you've got to have four people cooking the barbecue. It's going to be messy. There's going to be grease everywhere. You're going to have a cleaning option at the end of it. Whereas if we go something like a roast beef option, it's all pre-prepared and it actually costs a hell of a lot less. So that the amount that it costs for the materials to put in it is less. And then you have something that looks a lot better and you can charge a lot more money for it. So looking at your costs in and your profit in. So
yeah, and that's really important, I think, to look outside your club and look outside your committee to find the people that can do that task, whether it's being, you know, the accountant to manage the money, because like a money for this event potentially will be in the order of $20,000 to $100,000, you know, and that's a lot of money to be able to manage on the night. And we're probably not going to get time to pull that together, talk about that in this show, Joe, but we certainly will in future shows. We'll talk about managing the money and event ticketing and those sorts of things, because it's a really challenging and daunting task.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we might do, Chief, is that we're coming towards the end of the show and we might take the opportunity now just to summarise some of the key points that we've covered here, talking to the lads for the benefit of the community out there involved in grassroots sports, and probably looking at it in terms of the event's theme. You start off with a strong committee, and the committee has to be people who are all pulling together with the same purpose, and you have a very distinct target. That's the kind of thing I'm getting from you guys when you talked about getting your committee together. So the committee, the other strong flavour that I get from the conversation is the networking aspect. So I think Jace was talking about, you know, you have to use every bit of network that you have, and the other one is the comms. So make sure that people know what you're doing and why you're doing it, and you can present it to them in some kind of form. So you guys have got some really nice posters here in A5 and some documentation which goes through what you're trying to do, who's it for, what benefits people will get out of participating in the fundraising event. So you're very, very clear about what you're trying to do, how you're going to do it, and what people are going to get involved. So is there anything I've missed there, Chief?
No, I think after we run the event, we'll come back and talk about volunteer management and we'll tell you what we've missed. But Jace, thank you very much for coming along.
Thank you,
and Chris and Mick, well, thank you for telling the story, and that was amazing.
Right, and a bit of housekeeping before we go, lads. The night is for Snooze, of course, David Sands. It's on Saturday, February the 22nd, 2014. It's a live auction night, so there'll be plenty of great things up for auction. And tickets are $25 per head. It's not going to break the bank. It's from 7:30 till 12 midnight. And there's a sausage sizzle and drinks at bar prices. It's at the Peninsula Community Theatre, Wilson's Road, Mornington. Sausage sizzle because we're blokes, apparently. Tickets are limited, so book as soon as you can. You can book at David Sands R2R. So that's www.davidsandsr2r, all one word, .webs.com. Our Facebook is David Sands R2R, so that's www.facebook.com/DavidSandsR2R. Twitter at SandsR2R. So there's all your contacts. Give the lads or drop them a line or drop them an email if you can contribute in any way, whether that be volunteering. The lads are after some volunteers at the moment. Or if you've got some items that you'd like to contribute to the auction. Just echoing Steve's comments, a big thanks to you guys for coming to the studio. Jason Mathers, Chris Holcomb, Mick Diverston, local legends down here in the morning on the Mornington Peninsula, I'm reliably told. And we thank you for your time.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you. Thanks very much for listening in. We really enjoyed talking to the guys today. We hope you did too. And we'll catch you all next week on the Sports Community Radio. Drop us a line if you want to contribute to the show. Join the show at sportscommunity.com.au. Until then, we'd love you to be part of our sports community. So come visit us and we'll talk to you all again next week. Thanks very much.